At the highest level, college football is a business that pays coaches millions of dollars, showcases players who will move on to careers in the NFL, and entertains millions of fans. In The System, subtitled The Glory and Scandal of Big-Time College Football, Jeff Benedict and Armin Katayan examine the current landscape of what they call college football's mega programs. Jeff and Armin, welcome back to Only a Game.
Thanks for having us, Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
Let's begin with a statistic. You found that, quote, by July 2013, at least 79 head football coaches made $1 million annually, and 52 of them made more than $2 million. Armin, did you find any college presidents or chancellors dismayed by those numbers?
No, I did not. These mega programs have become the front porch or the welcome mat for many of these universities and a way to promote and extend the brand. So the game has moved far beyond the field. And that's why in a case like Nick Saban, who's making $5.5 million at the University of Alabama, the chancellor there said it's the single best investment that university has ever made.
Yeah, but you found that only 22 of the top 120 college football programs break even or make a profit. Jeff, it seems like the other 30 schools with coaches making at least $2 million a year might need accounting lessons.
Well, in fact, you know, the story, I guess, that counters the good one that Armin just told is up at Washington State, where we documented their hiring of Mike Leach, which made him the highest paid public employee in the state of Washington. Their school president, Elson Floyd, said, look, we did this because we have to, but it's not because we think it makes sense or it's a good idea. It's just to keep up with the Joneses. We have to keep doing this. And I think that that's the position that a lot of these schools have taken that are shelling out this money, is they feel like they don't have much choice.
If you see it as a big poker game where the ante into the game is not only $2 million salaries, but an expansion of the stadium and an upgrade of the facilities. If you fail at this, and most programs do fail, it comes at a heavy cost to the university. But this is what these schools are willing to risk, and more universities are adding football teams because they believe that they will bring in more students, it'll bring in more donations, and it'll increase the prestige of the university. That's the game right now.
Jeff, at one point in the book, you conclude that the NCAA lacks the resources to monitor big-time college sports. But in the chapter titled The Investigators, you report that the NCAA fails to follow its own rules when it does investigations, and that's recently been demonstrated. Does the NCAA do anything right?
Sure, they do some things right. I think that, you know, one of the points we were trying to make here in the book is that college football has gotten so big and so diverse that the NCAA has grown at the same time, and to me, and I think Armin, it's gotten too big for its britches, but they really don't have the capability or the resources to do the kinds of investigations that would really need to be done to police the bigger issues. And that ends up being done more by the media and investigative journalists than it does by the NCAA.
This week, NCAA President Mark Emmert said once again that players should not be paid, declaring that, quote, if they want to become a professional athlete, then they ought to have the opportunity to become a professional athlete. Armin, does that seem to you a legitimate contention that addresses the circumstance?
I think it's a legitimate contention. I don't think it addresses the circumstances. Yes, they get scholarships. Yes, they get room and board. Yes, they get a certain amount of money every month. But it's not enough. It's not what an average student can make if they were working. These players can't work. I'm very much in favor of finding a way, smarter people than I, to find a way to get a stipend into the hands of these players that are responsible for this spectacle that we watch and that ESPN and CBS and Fox pay billions of dollars a year collectively to televise. So I think Mark Emmert is in la-la land if he thinks that this is going to continue with the stakes ever increasing, with a national football playoff on the horizon, and there isn't going to be some sort of job action someday by these athletes in order to get what I believe they deserve, which is a small piece of the pie.
And there's another piece of that, too, is that more than 99% of these players, when they finish their 4 years of eligibility, will never play professional football, but almost all of them will live with lifelong ramifications from having played it for 4 years in college. Their bodies take a beating, but when they leave school, they're solely responsible for the costs and the health care and the treatment that some of these guys have to have the rest of their lives.
I'm speaking with Jeff Benedict and Armin Katayan about their new book, The System, and you're listening to Only a Game. It's intriguing that you began the book with the scene at the BCS Championship, Notre Dame against Alabama last January, and ended it with a celebration of, quote, that grand spectacle which the game provides. I'll ask this question of each of you. Is that spectacle so grand that academic cheating, the rising tide of criminal acts, booster payoffs, again, your words, should be accepted as the cost of doing business?
Well, I don't think it should be accepted as the cost of doing business. I think right now it's allowed to continue because the game is such a draw. The spectrum of people who tune in every weekend to watch college football is broader than it is in any other sport. And if you go to a college football game on a Saturday afternoon, I don't care which stadium you decide to visit, you'll see everything from the rowdy 20-year-old college students in the student section to very successful, financially wealthy alumni sitting up in the boxes. People love the game so much that they will keep coming back despite all these problems because people know this stuff is going on.
The word is kind of out now through our work and through Sports Illustrated and Yahoo Sports and New York Times and other people who are now starting to write about this in a way that helps people understand that this cannot continue, I don't believe, because if they just keep throwing money at this thing, I think there's no telling where this thing is headed.
I guess the final question is, can the grand spectacle exist without the abuses?
I don't think so.
I don't think either.
I think the grand spectacle right now with cost of a player coming to a university under the table payments of $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 in the case of one documented case we had down in Texas with Ricky Seals Jones and his family, an offer that was denied by Chester Jones, his father. No, I think this system isn't going to change, at least in the big picture, but I think it has now been to a degree exposed so people can come to some agreement as to what they believe is worthwhile keeping and what should be removed.
And it almost makes you a little uneasy when you watch the game on Saturday now, and which is why I've said that I see the game a lot differently now than I did 2 years ago. And it's not all, cheer, yell, and scream anymore. And I think that it'll be that way for most readers.
Jeff Benedict and Armin Katayan are the authors of The System, The Glory and Scandal of Big-Time College Football. The book is published by Doubleday. Jeff, it was good to speak with you again.
Thank you, Bill. Privilege.
And Armin, thank you very much for joining me.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking.
It's 22 and a half minutes before the hour.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. The Music Emporium, for 45 years offering collectible boutique and vintage acoustic guitars. TheMusicEmporium.com. And Eton, offering the American Red Cross radio line a portable solar-powered radio with cell phone charger and flashlight for emergencies or travel. Now at Radio Shack. This is NPR.
The next Hong Kong Marathon, sponsored by Standard Chartered Bank, may not be photographed, at least by the runners. This week, the bank's chief executive, Benjamin Hong Pi Chang, asked the organizers of the race to ban the use of cell phones by the competitors. During last February's Hong Kong Marathon, runners attempting to take photographs of themselves caused so many collisions and spills that some characterized the scene as pandemonium. Many of the participants were bloodied and bruised when they crossed the finish line. We want people to apply a little bit of common sense and discipline, said Benjamin Hong Pi Chang of the race, which last year included 72,000 people. Gee, I wonder if that could have been part of the problem.
Something about it, I just can't live without it, got the